This is the holiday parade for us. We were downtown Santa Cruz in the back of a pickup truck, but we had some network problems, wouldn't you say, Miles?
Just, you know, a few.
So the whole thing sounds like a bad cell phone conversation. I wouldn't listen to it if I were you. In fact, I don't think I have. It was awesome being in the back of the truck, though.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, it's kind of a staccato. It's a little musical, if you will, version of Geek Speak.
You're being very kind.
Good
luck. Look, listen to this one. But if you're going to listen to this one, definitely listen to next week. Don't judge us on this. See you soon.
Yeah, haters gonna hate, but, you know, Geek Speak.
Welcome to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks today are a whole bunch of us. We're sitting downtown on Pacific Avenue about to start the holiday parade. It is December 4th, 2010, 10:07 on the Central Coast of California. Welcome to Geek Speak. The geeks today are Ben Jaffe. Morning, Ben.
Morning. How's it going?
And Lindsay Lonnie. Hi, Lindsay.
Good morning.
Alex Leas.
Good morning, Lyle.
Miles Colin Elam.
Good morning.
And Al, hold the tarp down because it's raining. Luckow.
Hello, everybody.
We're in the back of a pickup truck provided by UCSC, the theater department pickup truck. And we're sitting on Pacific Avenue waiting for the parade to start. I believe it started a few minutes ago, but we are further down the lines. We can't exactly tell. In front of us is Mount Green Theater. And if you'd like to come down and get rained on, you're welcome to join us on Pacific Avenue. We're going to be doing Geek News today, the entire hour of Geek Speak, as we drive around beautiful, sunny California City. Well, not exactly sunny. It is raining on us. We're going to start out the news by Mr. Al Luckow. Let's talk a little bit about some snakes or robots. I don't know, anything cool.
Okay, well, we still got some Geek Speak theme music going on.
Oh, yeah, let me take that out.
Which is pretty good, by the way, I might add.
Wait, did you write that?
I did that one.
So. I think that's Dave's title.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's Dave's. No, yeah. I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. It is a good one, though. Dave's a great guy. I ran across this story, and it just, it's titled Flying Snakes and Robots, just really kind of struck me as a great
piece. Really? That headline is really good. I'm really surprised.
Well, you know, this is a weird time. Apparently, there's this tree. It's called the Paradise Tree Snake. It's from the south of Southeast Asia. And these snakes, they leap from trees. And when they're in the air, they kind of move their body in such a way, or dynamically, that creates a lift. So this snake is actually kind of flying. It tilts its body, you know, 25 to 30 degrees relative to the airflow.
So it's like a flying squirrel, since it's flying.
It's kind of like a flying squirrel, okay, but, great. You know, it's a snake.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a flying snake.
Does this mean that you're walking along, you might be able to trees on some snake?
Flying squirrel. Look how cute, a flying snake. You know, and now let's get to the robot part. Look like they're slithering through the air. And they did a study of mechanism at Virginia Tech. And what they're doing is they're trying to, and by the way, this is all research by the financed by the Pentagon. They're trying to find the flying snake useful to engineers, trying to design more effective search and rescue vehicles, like robot slithering snake-like through the sky. And, you know, you think about this and you think, well, this, you know, I mean, this is crazy. But the thing is, it does have some practical use. Study of these snakes and looking at a biological organism, biomimetics, taking a biological being and trying to turn a robot into it.
Mechanizing it.
Which I think biomimetics is a. It was worth reading the story just so that I could say biomimetrics.
Can I say
biomimetrics? Yeah. So they're also doing studies on falling crows, cruising hummingbirds, but obviously the most interesting one is the flying snake. So watch out for your flying snake. You know, it isn't. It's just regular old run-of-the-mill poisonous death
flying snake.
Yeah. It's just a normal snake. Yeah.
Thanks, Al. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful snake. I really appreciate it. Yeah. Lindsay, what's got for us today?
NASA discovered a new
hormone. On Earth? Why are they looking here?
It's a bacteria found in the monolithic area called ESAJ-1.
Great work.
And it's a local with color.
On which all the life forms are made of carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and sulfur. And most life forms use phosphorus as building blocks for their DNA. But the unique thing about this life form is that it uses arsenic to build its DNA armor. Now, arsenic is more poisonous than most life forms on Earth. But this discovery is basically rethinking our ideas on how life can be created and sustained. And so, in the solar system, looking for certain conditions. Life.
Because of this discovery. Very cool. Yeah. Mr. Alex Leas, hi.
Hey, how you?
Good.
All right, so I'm going to go with a little bit of sort of camera gear, Dr. Pat's stuff. Canada has a technology that they use, so it's supported on some of the really high-end cameras where they use cryptography to authenticate images so that they basically validate proof that the image is actually the picture that the camera took.
Used for court cases.
Court cases, anywhere where you actually need to prove that the image really is what it is. And it seems a Russian hacker has actually gone and managed to extract the encryption key out of the and is able to falsify the actual an image that really wasn't taken by the camera and make it pass the test of Canon's verification test of an astronaut on the moon where we've got the American flag and replaced it with the Russian flag, and he's authenticated it to say this is really the true picture.
So basically the authentication is not so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big challenge to try and keep the key material protected. The only thing I can think is, cause, I mean, the camera has to be able to have the key material in order to really the signature, the signing of the image.
Right.
And it needs to have the private key in order to sign. Well, that needs to somehow be protected, but it has to be on the camera that the person owns. So I'm guessing if they're going to be trying to solve this problem, they're going to need to put in some sort of enclosed chip that, you know, it destroys the key or something like that in order to get around.
Do we have X-Files theme to be able to say, trust no one?
Yes, trust no one.
Well, virtually every photograph has been retouched. So nowadays, being digital, it's just like, there's not one photo in anything that hasn't been.
I mean, the thing is, if you got this authentication inside the chip of the camera, right, and that's what you're, if this takes an image, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Couldn't the camera just take a picture of a Photoshopped image? I mean, you print out an image and then you take a picture of that with the camera, and now it's authenticated.
In theory, yes, yeah. You could do that too. That's another way to get around the issue.
Yeah, but only if you have very high resolution.
You might be able to actually detect that that's not the original image through a
mean. But the camera would, of course, be focusing too close and all that kind of thing. So.
Yeah.
I wonder what the legal implications are. Everyone had a case where they got put in jail.
So we are actually officially moving on Pacific Avenue now, and I believe our sound problems are a lot better. We have some issue on my laptop. Hello, everyone.
Excellent.
That'll do it. Watch out, Ben. You're gonna get really wet right there. All right, so it's raining pretty officially now, I would say. And
efficiently.
Efficiently?
It's officially raining.
Gravity's doing a great job right now.
It's officially raining efficiently.
Raining on our parade.
Have everything
raining on your microphone cable or your stand there. Okay.
The water is falling at the acceleration due to gravity. Standard acceleration due to gravity.
9.8 meters per second squared.
32 feet per second.
All right. I said meters. Man.
I know. Well, for those English people and Americans out there who don't understand the decimal.
Yes, for everyone in the U.S., metrics. Myanmar, and Liberia.
Tell we're geeks because we're throwing our coats not on ourselves but on all of our gear.
That's right. I'm getting wet. I don't care. As long as the microphones don't kill us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned about the PAs too.
you know what? Think about it.
They are where they are, and, you know.
Do we have extra umbrellas for them? All right. So we're on Pacific Avenue, but, of course, we're broadcasting on 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz. And we are going to now go to Mr. Miles Elam. He's going to tell us an amazing story about...
about temperatures below absolute zero.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's not possible.
Right. You think that's absolute zero times excitation of all atoms and atoms within a material. So there is no movement. That's what absolute zero is. And if you know any physics, you know that heat travels from a hotter source where there is more excitation to a source with less excitation. That's the heat transfer. Well, what they found is they create substances that have a higher density. They have more basically. And they will always try to take more heat in. Even something that has... they were always trying to give off heat. Even to, I'm totally getting this.
It's a distraction of traveling
heat
down
will always,
to the
No, heat will always flow to them. Always trying to take on that, the extra mass.
Yeah, that makes sense. So there's more molecules there, therefore it's going to be having a better heat receiving built.
Right. But even something that is absolute zero. The thing that is absolute zero goes into that negative state as well.
Right.
Even though you can't really think of it as hot the same way.
It's not colder.
Right. But it is a negative temperature value.
It's you have one absolute zero and you're sitting next to it that's a less
negative,
than that.
Yeah.
But it's not. Thank you, Miles.
It is taking on energy from the absolute zero.
Right. I like it. All right. Thank you very much. Let's see, I think it's Ben's turn. Is the board finally running? Next time I say, let's do the tech and I'll run the board. Let's not do that. Let's do that. We are actually live on Pacific Avenue. We are starting across.
We're not even. We're just.
We're right before Laurel. We're almost there.
All right. So, what's your next story of the day, Mr. Jaffe?
Well, us have recently surveyed about the galaxies. Red dwarf stars. Now, until now, we haven't really been able to see red dwarf stars. So we haven't really known exactly when there are, but the universe, including these red dwarf stars, so that's one with a lot of their numbers. This guy Count Van Dukem before his name. Observatory in Hawaii, they surveyed these 8 elliptical galaxies and they found that they had a lot more red dwarfs inside the elliptical galaxies than we previously thought. And I mean, like 5 to 10 times as many stars, period. Which means that if this is correct, then the number of stars in the universe is not 100 sextillion, it's 300 sextillion. Your brain is still just a heck of a lot of stars. But if you put it a different way, we took the number of stars that we estimated were in the universe. We just tripled it, right? Yeah. So that's assuming that this is the case. A couple other things. This may actually solve the problem of a little dark matter problem. So we were looking at elliptical galaxies, and we're looking at the way these things orbit around each other and everything. And we were thinking, well, maybe elliptical galaxies actually maybe have a little bit more dark matter associated with them for whatever strange reason. This might mean that they don't. This
Our
might
original
mean that
estimates
actually,
are off.
And exactly.
It might mean that we just have more stars than we weren't aware of.
Exactly. So a lot of people do have problems with these, with this theory and with these observations, maybe saying it's way too early to say, oh, yeah, now we have 300, however many. But it's still a pretty cool news story to think that that even though we can calculate these things with a pretty decent degree of efficiency and confidence, we're still very wrong about a lot of things. You know?
So it's interesting. I mean, if we actually were wrong about that, it's there was a that was made to go from saying, well, the numbers are not adding up, so dark matter. You know?
Right.
I mean, where did they come up with that?
Well, everyone figured they needed to be a placeholder. There needed to be something there to fill it out, and they couldn't see it, so.
So apparently we can see it. It just we didn't know.
Yeah. Well, no, but this doesn't solve
the problem about dark matter. This just gets. I mean, I love that this is the cutting edge of science. We don't know exactly what's going on. We have these great theories, 3 or 4 are going on. A couple are conflicting. No, that's wrong. We get more data, and all the science changes. Like, yeah, it doesn't stay stagnant.
Right, and
we learn from
it. And this is the point of science. If we knew everything, there would be no point to science. There would be, oh, we know everything, we're done. And science is all about, well, so hey, why does that happen?
To protect science, we should stop doing science so we don't solve all the problems.
I'd be happy with some other colors of matter.
Yeah.
I mean, there's dark matter. Are there any other colors?
You want more salmon?
Salmon.
I've got light matter. And lavender.
Salmon. Fuchsia blue matter. Would be nice.
So we've everybody's gotten a turn, right?
Yep.
Which means it's Al's turn again.
Hey,
and
by the way, we are crossing Laurel Street right now.
Oh yeah.
How often do you do live radio broadcast from the middle of an intersection?
Pacific and Laurel, right?
We are.
We're being followed by a bunch of children dressed in vegetables.
That's awesome.
You're making me hungry.
Wet vegetables.
Yes.
Al, what's going on? I mean, this is an exciting day for me. What's happening is there's so much going on. We have the tarp. We got the rain. We got people holding umbrellas over the speakers when it rains, which is nice for us.
It's certainly anything.
It's extremely exciting.
It's exciting. Yeah. This is
we are out of our element.
Yes.
We're out.
Yes.
So tell us about a day that's less exciting than
today. Since this is such an exciting day, I might as well tell you about how a computer calculated April 11th, 1954, as the most boring day.
you know there's someone that had a birthday
that day,
and they're like, man.
I know. Well, there's a programmer. His name is William Tungstall, and he's got a programming called True Knowledge, and he's branded that day as the most boring day in history. The way he did it was he loaded up 300 million historical events that took place between 1900 and present day. I guess that's the most boring day since from 1900.
You don't know.
Yeah, you can't really know.
I mean, 1757.
I don't imagine it was real exciting the moment the universe began to form.
That was a very exciting day, actually.
Either it was exciting or I don't know.
As much as time applied at that time.
It's a point of view.
I don't know. I think the most boring day must have been the day he had time to calculate this.
Well, he's got this
thing,
and
pretty bored.
It's made all the news, and you know, it's interesting. You know, to load all these things in, all the things that happened. I think it's basically saying what did news consider useful at that time. Highlights from that day include, general election of the birth of a Turkish academic.
Okay,
death of a soccer player.
When you start listing the days,
I mean, there's nothing.
Basically, those are the boring days.
Yeah, that would be April 11th, 1954, and if you're born that day, I'm sorry, it's probably
please,
not
but
the most.
Please let us know. Call us next week.
Let us know.
But
actually,
by that metric, you can't know that it's the most boring day until after you know when someone has done something important after the fact to know that they were born on that day. So was it really an important day?
Okay.
Or?
So let me ask you about this day of the most boring day, whatever. Mm-hmm.
You mean April 11th, 1954?
That's the one.
Yeah.
So
that's even a boring date.
April 11th, 1954. If you've got your birthday at that time, next week, we will give you a hard drive if you call up. A brand new hard drive, really awesome. Seagate, what is this thing?
It's a Seagate hybrid.
We talked about it a couple episodes Geekspeak ago.
Wait, we have these things to give away?
We have one to give away.
One, yeah.
No, you went and bought one, too, because it's so awesome. Anyway, we're going to give away the one, and if that's your birthday, call us up. You get it.
April 11th, 1954.
Yes.
Do you have to prove it?
If we don't get that person, which we probably won't, you have to prove it. We're going to give it away next week, live on air. And if you podcast this show, of course, please listen live online. We're going to give it away. We're going to have a query question from this week. So listen to this episode really well. If you can answer it correctly, whoever answers it first on air next week, you'll get this great hard drive.
Yep.
Once again, April 11th, 1954.
Hey, so do they have to prove it?
Momentous
so,
Seagate hard drive.
And if they have to prove their birthday, do they have to use like Canon's authentication of a picture and send us it?
That's right. That's the picture of the birth certificate in the Canon.
Yeah, just so you know, this isn't just any hard drive. This is a hard drive that the geeks themselves have bought.
Yeah, for themselves.
We went and did that, and then all of us bought one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just bought one. I love it. It's incredible.
You're listening to Geekspeak on KOSP. You're also listening to Geekspeak on Pacific Avenue. You're between Laurel and something. Yeah.
Laurel and that's
Lincoln or.
Salvation
Laurel and the Metro Center.
Thank you. We're near the Metro Center on Pacific Avenue, broadcasting live from the back of a pickup truck provided by University of California, Santa Cruz, the theater department. And can somebody look on the outside of the truck? Because we should talk about what it is that's on the side of the truck. So get the information about the show that's going to be happening next winter on the main stage for the theater department. Joe and Eric are driving. Rick is carrying a microphone. Maybe if we get that going, depending if we stop not long enough to do that. But we're going to continue doing news as we go. We're going to go ahead and go to Miss Lindsay Lonnie, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
All right. I'm cold. Yeah, it's a little chilly. I layered. I did the layering thing. I wanted to talk.
You always have layers.
I do always have layers.
strange, unpredictable pricing of 3G data plans. Personal cost of mine. Whereas I bought an unlimited data plan for my phone, and I was thinking, well, I'm moving, right, and I'm going to just replace my internet connection with my phone. And I thought that'd be a brilliant idea.
To tether? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's a hotspot, and so, yeah, tethering copy. Tether, I guess. And what I found is that unlimited isn't really unlimited, just the data plans. They usually have a hard stop at, or not a hard stop, but it's a 2 gig or 5 gig limit, and then after that they charge you per megabyte. Some, you know, like 1 cent or 8 cents or 6 cents, depending on the provider.
Unlimited as long as you're less than 5 gigs.
Exactly. Yeah. Unlimited as long as blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So well, that does make sense because it seems like, I mean, I think that's a common thing for the unlimited. It's unlimited but reasonable.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think,
so are you not going to do it?
Well, I ended up getting it so that I could use it as a hotspot, you know, somewhere where I want a computer and there's no wire. But now I still have to purchase cable, you know, like internet at home. And so I'm wondering if part of this, a lot of the phone companies that you can do this with also have cable. They sell cable. So I'm wondering if it's kind of a conflict of interest thing or if they're worried about the traffic or what.
I would assume it's about traffic. But what is the max on these plans? Is it something you can't be watching Hulu all the time on?
You would have to pay a lot of money more than you would pay for cable.
That's not unlimited. I mean, come on. If you're going to talk about unlimited, it's got to be the point where you could use it.
Right. But at the same time, it is different technology. It is going to be an issue trying to get all that bandwidth through.
Right. But still, if we're talking about the different data plans and the pricing, don't they charge like different prices depending on the type of phone you're using and for what purpose?
Yeah.
It's like you have your data plan. If you use it for a Wi-Fi hotspot, they want to charge you more than if you're using it directly in your phone. It's like it's the same bandwidth.
Yeah.
Why am I paying differently?
And let's be clear. People in Japan in 1999 were doing video conferencing on their phones.
Yeah. So behind the time.
We are ridiculously behind on...
All right. So we're not... We're now next to the Metro on Pacific Avenue. We're broadcasting live today on KUSB from Pacific Avenue. We're driving the back of a truck provided by the Theater Arts, the UCSC, and Theater Arts is mentioning that Mummified Deer is the next production on February 25th through March 6th, 2011 at the Theater Arts main stage. Again, it's Mummified Deer, directed by Keon Valdez. You know who this person is?
I'm good friends with him.
Oh, good.
No, I'm just kidding.
All right, and I love this. I needed that information. Ben stuck his head over the truck and wrote it down on a piece of receipt from Walgreens. And Al took a photograph, high-def photograph of it, and handed it to me. Sweet. Yeah. I love geeks. All right. Next up, we're going to be talking with Alex Slias. Hi.
Hey. So, Lyle, do you want your data again? Do you ever want to see your data again?
You know I want my data.
Because I might want to have to take your data if you have it again. See, ransomware has actually been making a comeback. This is malware that can affect your computer. And it will go and encrypt your data and put up a little message saying, if you want to see your data again, you need to pay us $150.
No.
Yeah. This happened a couple years ago, and it was actually making its rounds.
So we're talking about it's like a virus. It's a malware application.
Yeah, exactly.
It tricks you into downloading it and installing it, or tricks you into installing it.
Yeah, or,
and
then or once you've it done gets that, in other ways.
Instead of trying to get rid of spam or anything, and like theoretically, instead it just encrypts all your data and then says, hey, you want this back? You got to get some money.
Exactly. And that's been making a comeback. There's been a new version. A particular variant that's called GP code. And it's a little bit worse than its predecessor that was out a couple years ago in that it's using much better encryption. It's using AES 256.
So let me ask you this. If I have an application that's got data and no one can unencrypt it, is it a public-private key thing? So the application's actually a public key and encrypts it so that the other person that you don't know
Pretty much, the key comes
into your system.
And I mean, the one, a couple of important points on this is if this happens to you, one, don't. Because you.
$150 though for all your data, it's a good deal.
You're dealing with, usually organized crime in they get their money and they're gone. Reason to these people by doing so, just voting. Is they're doing,
that's fine. But what if you're the person that got your data?
Back your data up.
Okay, good point.
Treat it as if your computer crashed. Other alternatives, if you don't have your data backed up, I recommend turn your computer off immediately. If it's doing, just unplug it, power it, hold down your power button on your laptop, which is off. That oftentimes saves some of your data. But in reality, back your data. I mean,
yeah, just there are two types of hard drives. Hard drives that haven't failed yet, and hard drives that have failed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'll for the latter. Which turn is it, Miles or Ben?
I guess it is
Miles. It's Monster Miles, Elon Miles, Colin.
See, this is my way of
host. Junkie, hi, Miles. What's your news story, sir?
I'm going to talk about, because it is getting into the Christmas season, a wonderful Japanese aquarium.
Oh, can I hold that thought for just a second? That's sure. What Miles is about to talk about. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. We're on Pacific Avenue. My name is Lyle Trockville. We have a whole truckload of geeks. And Miles is about to tell us about.
Yeah, there's other caroling going on. It's a Christmas season. And there's a Japanese aquarium that's used to power the lights in a Christmas tree.
Wait,
what? Aquarium is a power source?
Yes, it does. In the form of an electric eel.
No. Wow. Wow. And it powers the whole Christmas tree.
Well, it powers it. It's a 2-meter Christmas tree, and it has glowing intermittent flashes. So LED lights. So very low power to begin with. And as the electric eel lets off its little charge, the lights will come on and blink off. So you have these blinking lights, these flickering lights, all in the form, of a Christmas season that we're all familiar with, but powered by biology, powered by a living creature.
Okay, so how do they do it? Do they attach wires to the or just walk? And why is there a differential in the water? It must be salt. Oh, Miles is out. Talk to me, Miles.
It's in the water, and they do have leads that can go that are on either end of it.
Wow.
So there is a potential difference. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, that's really cool. And LED lights, Christmas lights, right?
Yeah. You're not going to be running incandescent lights with this. Although they can get to an impressive charge, you're talking about all the lights for a 6-foot tree.
Let's say hi to Chip. Chip just jumped on the back of our float. Chip is the parade organizer here downtown. How many people are participating in the parade today?
At least 6 people are down here today.
Wow.
I haven't counted, but I know there's. I would say closer to a dozen. Yeah, it's hard to tell. We have 50 groups,
uh-huh.
50 different groups ranging from the Great Morigani, who is one person, to, Motion Pacific Dance Studios, I think, has about 100. And, who knows?
Are there somewhere here 100 people in tights freezing in the rain? Is that what you're saying?
There are people at the back of the parade. Santa Cruz Ballet Theater is not only in tights, but tutus.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We're in the wrong float, guys.
No, yeah. You're not. You're in the right float.
Yeah, we're in plastic.
Can I just say, this is kind of geeky.
Yeah, we'll have to put a picture of this.
Chip, why don't you describe what you see right now?
Well, I don't know if I could describe what I see. Are we actually on radio?
We are broadcasting on air on Central Coast, California.
But we're driving down a parade.
Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Underneath a plastic tarp.
So you guys are in the back of a flatbed truck. You've turned it into a radio station. You have at least 4 laptops, probably a few more in your pockets that I don't see. A little mixing console.
4 iPhones, yeah, iPad.
And you have this beautiful roof above you made of some
plastic.
Petroleum byproduct.
Held up by mic stands.
Are you guys having fun in the parade?
We're definitely having fun. Now, we're coming down to the center point where the announcing happens, right? Do you want to announce us or should we announce ourselves?
Well, our good friends from the beach are here.
Wow. There we are. Something Miles actually wrote. Thank you, Miles. Well, so we are. We just for all the listener audience, the 1,000 people listening on air. We are in the center of Santa Cruz on a nice rainy day with 50 other groups of participants in the holiday parade, celebrating the holidays.
Fabulous to have you guys down here. Have fun. A lot of people out here just watching you guys.
Thanks.
Have fun. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you guys soon.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and thank you everyone who came out in the rain to check out this parade. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. For all you busy podcast listeners, get yourselves out of here. We're at Cathcart Street.
Next week, we will be giving away a hard drive on air. Person that listens to this show and can answer some good questions. Or if you were born April 11th, 1954, the most boring day ever. Let's go ahead and go on.
Scientifically proven.
What about all the people here who are listening on the side of the road who don't have any context for that comment? They're like, why'd you just miss my birthday?
No, context is unnecessary. If you were born April 11th, 1954, and you call in, you get a new hard drive.
Well, we have one. Did I tell you that we had one hard drive?
Well, okay, the first person.
That would be horrible to be the second. Get nothing and one of them. Yeah. All right.
Wow, you really are a boring person, aren't you?
Hi, how's it going?
Hello, hello. So, this is crazy. So, my new story is about a toy robot which single-handedly detoured traffic out in Denver. So there's this robot. It looks kind of like, have you guys seen Toy Story 2? It's sure. Like Zurg, evil robot who sure. just looks completely comical.
Yeah.
Well, there was a robot that was meant to the ground under a foot. And so the authorities thought it's a toy robot that's cemented there. It actually like closed a large street and, during rush hour and everything. It was kind of intense. But I just thought this was a really funny story, and hearing that Al wasn't going to cover it, I thought, you know, I mean, this is robot news. It has to be. The first line is, a robot met its end near Coors Field tonight when the Denver Police Department bomb squad detonated the suspicious object, bringing to an end the hours-long standoff between police and the approximately 8-inch-tall figurine.
It held its ground.
I just thought it was great. Charming. So anyway, that's pretty much it. But you guys should go to geekspeak.org after the parade. I'm going to put the story up, and there's a really comical picture of this robot just standing here. I'm showing the geeks
that's
right
fantastic.
Now.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
man, that thing looks menacing.
It looks like
you know, I'd blow it up too.
It looks like it should be one of those robots that turns its head around and around and around and around, you know?
All right, Al, can you tell us about some social network systems online? We're talking about Facebook and Twitter a lot, but can you tell us about something...
Yeah.
A little more interesting.
There's so many social networks out there, and we're all familiar with what they are. I ran across a website that sort of details what they consider the 19 strangest social networks on the web. So you're looking at, well, Facebook, 500 million members. Okay, that's pretty boring.
Wait, just say for radio, these social networks?
Yeah, well, I had to... there's 19 of them, but I'm only going to really mention four.
Okay. This is the internet we're talking about.
Yeah. There's one that's called Myrl, M-Y-R-L, and it's a cross-world entertainment platform that it connects, all the virtual worlds you might be a part of, Second Life, Lively, Entropia, WeWorld. It connects them all. You can kind of go in there, and you can be your avatar in all these other worlds. So it's sort of like another social kind of network. There's one called Line for Heaven, which is a fun-loving community that reportedly welcomes anyone who wants to get into heaven. So as you're there, you earn karma points, and there's some objective, and I guess the objective is to get to heaven. I don't know how they prove that. I don't know.
Do you have to battle an ogre before at the end?
Like? You might, but there's another one. There's another interesting one called A Small World, and this is a private social network. You can only be invited to this network, and they say that they have celebrities, all these kinds of people in there. And it's sort of like a Facebook for like really famous people, and you can't get in unless you are invited. Apparently, they have Remy Martin. Supplied 4,000 bottles of premium cognac to parties
to get in.
This, to you know sort of fortify parties that this thing has. It's a lot of Hollywood.
It's a
people.
Rich Facebook.
It's like a rich Facebook. It's called A Small World, and that's unfortunately all I can tell you. So, and then a couple other real quick. Well, let's just talk about one. This one is called Hamsterster, and. I'll just
tell me it's not the hamster dance.
It's not like Catster or Dogster, but it's Hamster.
It's not like Friendster?
No. So, and those are other two real...
So, wait. What is it? It's a social network about hamsters?
If you really like
it's
your
for
hamster,
hamsters.
And no, it's not for hamsters. Although that's next. That's coming next, probably.
Look at all this wheel spin!
Oh, man. Yeah. That's the 1964 wheel. That thing's nice.
And these are all real. These are all real. Like, Catster is something... It's like a Facebook for
sure.
people who like cats,
course,
Dogster, and Hamsterster.
Alex here, our very own Alex Leas, actually runs a whole thing about bearded dragons. Probably the most popular forum about bearded dragons. If you have a bearded dragon, you got to go to bearded dragon.com?
It's what, .org.
.org. Are you going to start a social network?
I totally need to get bearded dragonster.
Well, those are just
What? I just said on the radio, somebody else's priority is getting
it
now.
Oh, it's gone now. Too bad.
Those are a couple of the ones I ran into, but we're going to put this link on geekspeak.org, and you can go in there and check out all these weird social networks, and there are a lot of them.
Okay, Lindsay, it's you're up. We might be having trouble with your mic, so go ahead and let's see how it goes.
All right. If you can't hear me, I can steal someone else's mic.
You sound good to me.
All right. Did you know that you can buy your own jet pack for $100,000?
What?
Yes.
low price of $100,000. I am there.
Sunday.
How come I didn't hear about this?
So for only $100,000, a New Zealand-based company called Martin Aircraft Company set out to build a Segway for the sky.
No. It sounds like drunk deaths of plenty.
Yes. It's a personal flying machine. It complies with U.S. aviation regulations for ultralights. So it weighs 254 pounds or less. It's designed for one person, holding no more than 5 gallons of fuel, and capable of moving at a top speed of 63 miles per hour or 55 knots.
How long can it drive? Can it fly?
So what they're saying is that it can fly for 30 minutes on 5 gallons of gas.
You can get to work with that.
But yeah. Not 31 minutes.
No.
30 minutes. It can fly 30. For 30 minutes. 30. Not 31.
I think you make sure you only fly for 20. I think
yeah.
That works.
Yeah.
Will that get me over the hill to San Jose to work?
Yeah, and what happens if you run out of gas?
You might get the summit.
You're walking, pal. You're walking.
The funny thing is,
hey, I feel horrible not addressing all these people. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
We're live on KOSP broadcasting Geek Speak. Been doing it for 10 years or so. This is the second year doing the parade. Happy holidays, everyone out in the cold.
Thank
you so much for coming out. Okay, back to radio. All right. Steve, thank you so much. Alex, it's your turn.
Oh, it's my
turn. Geek News.
All right. You know how Google's got their Google Street, I've announced Street with their computer,
sure, the
their technology, and you know all that sort of stuff. But they happen to be filming or photographing as they go along. And there have been several lawsuits against Google trying to get privacy, et cetera. Yeah. One couple actually, and most of these get dismissed. One couple actually had their lawsuit through,
uh-huh.
But their main argument was because that Google actually up their private road, that was a violation. So they are actually getting for trespassing, things like that. But
Google drove up a private road.
Yeah.
Well, how do they know this?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, they have it kind of on Google.
The only way you could get this picture is if you were like standing in our bathroom.
Yeah. So they actually went up and they had tried to talk about privacy, and they won their case against Google, but the judge wasn't. The fact that they don't really value their privacy because that same information was up on a real estate site and they didn't have names withheld about from the case, have it sealed, that sort of stuff. And so the judge gave them, they won the case, they gave them $1.
$1.
They sued Google.
Because Google
got
didn't actually do any damages. They did trespass, but they didn't actually.
Right,
do
because
any
their
damages.
Privacy was already out there. There damage, wasn't so it's just minimal sure. amount that they could give them. I personally, if I had won $1 from Google.
But you know what? Google lost. That's what the point
that
is.
That must be a first, right?
Yeah.
No. Miles, hi.
Hello. Indonesia. And Indonesia's deadliest volcano recently built its gatekeeper for being a spiritual individual that would watch over the volcano, interpret its rumblings, and let people know what it wants.
Volcanoes have wants and needs.
Unfortunately, that gig was killed by the volcano.
So you get a job by really a local.
They had a communication.
Well,
right
you,
down.
Sir, go to the volcano and go talk to it.
Name Joe?
In a sign of science creeping into our lives minute by minute, the new gatekeeper is in fact a volcanologist.
That makes more sense.
So now instead of interpreting it through
spiritual means,
through spiritual means, it's now doing it through established scientific means, and many people are applauding it. And
is it? I mean, what's the job you do when you're a gatekeeper? I mean, normally I think of a gatekeeper as someone who stands at the gate, makes sure no one passes unless they're supposed to. With a volcano, it's not like you have a lot of back and forth. You know, you witness and then you run. I mean, that's about it. Right? So I guess it's something's happening kind of job.
Well, the gatekeeper was also specifically called the gatekeeper as a tradition. Like it had traditionally been the person who could interpret the will of the volcano.
All right.
Well, one can only hope. If that volcanologist dies right immediately, then it is kind of evidence that science does not know everything, and maybe spiritualism is the way to go.
The gods are angry.
Yeah, interpreting the will of the volcano.
So I'm mixed here. I feel like doing a robot story, but it's really Ben Firm. Ben, do you got a robot story?
I don't have a robot. I just covered my robot.
All right. Well,
we
go
can
ahead.
Cover Alan.
No,
then
no,
I can
no
go.
It's you, sir. Go ahead.
I've got a Google story.
All right.
Which will follow the last Google story and then robot story.
Okay. Good.
So, Google Earth now has three-dimensional trees. Just kind of awesome. I first read this story. I was kind of like, you know, what
yeah,
to do?
Yeah, we have three-dimensional trees too.
There's one right now.
There's one right there.
Well, there are a lot of them.
There's one
here.
On Church and Pacific.
It's crazy. Right there. It's got no leaves. There are like a lot of species, different species. Like, oh, well.
Okay, anyway, so they're mapping trees?
Yeah, so for a while now, Google, SketchUp, and things like that have been allowing users to map buildings, full buildings. So they
sure.
build the buildings on the computer, they put them on Google Earth, and then you can see the building in 3D. Well, now we actually have trees to go with it. And at first, as I was saying, I was kind of like, yeah, who cares about putting trees in a virtual environment like Google Earth, you know, whatever. But I looked at some of the screenshots, and it makes a lot of sense when you see it, because before we had like this weird flat plane with these greenish, dark green areas
yeah.
that we knew were trees. And then we had all these buildings and the built-up cities. Now we've actually got like a relatively good three-dimensional map of what's going on in cities.
So now when you're looking at your virtual city and you're standing at one building in Google Earth, for example, and then you're going ahead and looking at...
Everybody!
We're passing one of the announcers. Hello, everyone. Happy holidays. We're broadcasting live on KOSB Men's Lodge Rock, so we have a whole truckload of geeks on... and so... Then,
so yeah.
The now, if you're on Google Earth and you're looking at a city and you're trying to look between two different things, what kind of your view is going to be? It's going to match basically what the reality is.
It's going to
match.
Trees
are going to be there. That's
yeah,
really cool.
Very well. A couple of quick things. They've got
a lot
80
of polygons in trees. I wonder how much. Well, anyway, go on.
Well, 80 million virtual trees and 40 tree species. So they actually look at the satellite imagery, figure out where the trees are automatically, and then they put a tree there. They just plant a tree there like that. You
that's
kind of
neat.
And then the other thing is they're also mapping forests in East Africa, the Brazilian Amazon, and coastal Mexico in kind of an effort to highlight the environmental issues around deforestation.
I don't think they could get tree species from that distance. That sounds crazy to me.
Well, no. I
think
mean,
they're using their little flying robot cameras.
I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah, something. I don't know. But they've modeled 40 tree species, and they're putting them all over the place. So pretty cool.
Very cool. Miles, do you?
Is it me?
It's you now. No, it's Al? Come on,
it's Al.
It's Al. All right, Al, please.
All right,
go ahead.
Let's see. Well, here's a good story. It's about a man who made $500,000 from selling virtual property.
Did it have trees on it?
No, I don't think it did.
Did it exist?
It was virtual. Actually, it's virtual. It existed virtually.
Wait, was this World of Warcraft stuff?
Nope. This was in Forbes. So it's not like some weird, you know, obscure thing.
Wait, so this is a businessman, made millions of dollars.
His name is John Jacobs.
Virtual land.
John Jacobs, and he just sold a virtual space station he spent the past 5 years managing for a whopping $635,000.
That's
great.
So he built this thing, and it's in virtual life. His name is, the name of his avatar is Never Die, but it's also the name of this bar in the Entropia universe. It's a Entropy Universe, for those of you who don't understand that. It's a massively multiplayer online gaming platform. So it's something a lot of people are into. And this guy, he bought this virtual property originally for $100,000. He mortgaged his home to buy a virtual property in this multiplayer game for $100,000. He built it up so it was a popular place. And then he sold it for $635,000.
Wow.
I guess I don't understand why there's so much value in nothing.
Well, because a lot of people go there, and then when they go to this virtual bar, they like spend real money and purchasing real things. You know, they're not real things. They're purchasing virtual things, like things that they want in this virtual world. So there is some sort of money transaction.
But in these how can you say that? Considering the industry that we work in,
I get that, but it's just crazy to me. I mean, I get it. I mean, websites are thousands of dollars, right? $100,000 for a good website, no problem.
Yeah, it's just
that's just a virtual thing, right?
Yep. But it's making you real money in your pocket.
And this is a virtual.
If you're selling,
I guess
something.
If you think about it as like a site,
it's a marketing thing. Yeah,
he built it just in his own home. You know, didn't leave his basement or wherever he works. And he's able to support his whole family now because he's, made this huge amount of money.
You know, I think we should get in this industry.
well,
and only make virtual property while traveling in the back of a truck down Pacific Avenue.
I don't know if I agree.
Yeah. No, you don't like that?
No, I mean, like, sitting in your basement making virtual property, that sounds like the most boring day
ever. Here's a value judgment, though.
April 11th.
There's a value judgment, though. Which is worth more, the virtual space station or the pet rock, which is real?
Yeah.
You know, real property.
Mm-hmm. He's got a point there.
That's true.
Yes, indeed, he does.
All right. We are traveling the back of a truck on Pacific Avenue. We are just getting to the end of Pacific Avenue and about to turn on the front, I would assume. And the geeks today are Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam, Al Luck, Lindsay Lonnie, and Alex Leas. My name is Lyle Troxel. We are broadcasting on KUSP 88.9 FM Santa Cruz. It is a drizzly day in Santa Cruz. There's the clock tower downtown.
Is this officially a gaggle of geeks?
A lot of people out here,
I
though.
I think this is a gaggle of geeks. I'm hoping it's a gaggle of geeks. So we are now heading up for one more news story with Lindsay. We'll probably get a few more news stories. And I want to remind everybody that next week, if you were born April 11th, 1954, that was the most boring day ever. And I'm sorry, but you do get a free hard drive if you call us on the show next week. Or
we have one hard drive.
That's true. Only one. First one to do that. Yes. And additionally, if you weren't born that day and you do answer good trivia from this week's show on next week's show and call us during the show, you're welcome to win that as well, as long as you're the first. You figured out. Yeah.
It's a good hard drive.
It's a good hard drive, yes. Lindsay, new story. Thank you.
Sure. Did you guys hear about the CALM Act being passed?
CALM, as in this is mellow?
Exactly.
I heard about it, but I really didn't get excited about it.
Okay. The commercial advertisement loudness mitigation. You're not excited about that? So earlier this year, this was passed by the Senate, and the House just approved it also, and it's on the way to the president's desk to be hopefully finally signed off. Democratic California Representative Anna Eshoo created this bill, and it basically requires commercials to be at the same decibel levels as the programs during which they play.
Oh, I heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah. So it gives the FCC the right to enforce that act. And
The FCC's going to regulate this now?
And they have a year to comply.
So the thing that doesn't make any sense to me about this is that I thought the peak level was always the same, and really it just has to do with the compression level of commercials, so that the lows are all high as well, so you have a high compression. So how are they going to register that? I mean, it's not a decibel thing exactly, it's like an average.
RMS or whatever.
That has to do sine waves specifically, but yeah, exactly.
Over a period of time, what's your approximate decibel level?
FM radio, you talk about like injection levels, and so I'm not sure how they're doing it. It might be a percentage thing, but it's interesting because theoretically, then, if you have a 30-second spot, you could be extremely loud and then really quiet.
Yeah.
And that might comply.
Right. And that's what's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know if it was written by audio geeky people that know about all this stuff.
Had to have tech people online on that.
Yeah.
The other question is, does this apply to sites like Hulu?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, right, because, of course, they're not broadcasting. They're just on the internets.
Right. Now, luckily, this was an area where Congress could get all together, Republicans and Democrats, to pass some legislation.
Mm-hmm.
They can't pass, whether
anything
tax
else.
Breaks or, just about anything.
They can't pass anything else, but they can make the
substance. But at least we don't have to turn down the volume on our commercials.
Yes.
That's what government's for.
That's what we can agree on.
Fantastic. Mr. Slius.
All right, so the FTC, you know how they went and had our do not
the,
call
the
list.
Federal Trade Commission.
Federal Trade Commission. Call list so that stuff different that marketers can't call you. Well, they're actually proposing a do not track list for the web so that people can sign up and basically have it so that they cannot be tracked. Now, how they're going to implement this is still up in the air. I can see by the look on your face, Lyle, that you're like, how on earth are they going to implement that? Yeah, it sounds messy. It sounds interesting.
So,
but people
tracking,
can basically say, don't track me.
Yeah,
follow me.
You can do that by just changing some settings on your browser.
I was thinking the same thing.
So, then again, if you did change your settings in your browser, there's still ways of doing this, right? You can start sharing IP address among companies, and theoretically get at least neighborhood working.
Is this also talking about like if you have a username with someone like Google, for example, do they track your search results and things like that? That's not just cookies and things that are in your browser.
I would assume it's as you travel along the web.
Yeah, I think what'll happen though is it'll open it up for litigation. So it's not so much really protecting you as it's making it so if somebody was being tracked and they had said, you're not supposed to track me, you can go after them and say, you've been tracking me.
you know, right. I don't know that you can really stop them, but you can make them right. say, you can say bad. You know,
yeah,
bad.
Right. And that's fine. That's yeah. that's probably enough. In some
something
sense.
To say.
Yeah. But it's also it's also taking advantage, talking to companies saying that the data they're collecting they can only be saved in certain ways, right?
Right. Yeah. There are some limitations, and you know, it has to be used for valid business purpose.
I love taking this kind of stuff and translating into the real world. I mean, if Kmart started taking pictures of all of their all the people that come through the doors and identifying them and then mm-hmm. keeping track just from photos what they're buying, and then they start selling it with Walmart and they all start getting together, they can do that in a physical way no problem without having to deal with you know, an online issue. So how do you, I mean, tracking can happen in the physical world as well, and that's acceptable, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't like the idea of it, but
all I can say is this is really awesome. We're like driving like 25 miles an hour now down a street.
We are high
holding
speed
a tarp
speaking.
Over our heads with rain falling on us, and we have mic stands holding it up, and
did
we're
you
broadcasting
say high
live.
High speed geek speaking.
Yes.
Get out of the truck right now.
This is the epitome of what you become a geek for.
Exactly. My entire life I've aspired. Yes. To this moment.
This is perfect.
This
I think we've reached nirvana right now.
Oh, now we're only going 10 miles.
This is it.
We're pulling on. I'm thinking to Cooper's. No,
SoCal.
SoCal. We're turning on to SoCal. We're just from Front Street to towards Pacific on SoCal. We're in the back of a pickup truck provided by the University of California, Santa Cruz, Theater Arts Department, and Joe and Eric are driving the truck. And on the side of the truck right now, we're talking about the next performance at Theater Arts, which is on the main stage on February 25th. Through March 6th, it's Mummified Deer, directed by Luis Valdez. So go ahead and see that if you'd like. And while you're there, I might be there. I work up there.
I think written by Luis Valdez. I'm not sure.
Oh, you know what? The photograph showed me, but the little sticky thing I'm using now, Ben, didn't work.
Oh, that's true.
Would have been better. And we are backing up to be closer to the parade, and we're going to be time for one more news story. So who's up?
That would be me.
Mr. Miles Elam.
We've talked about WikiLeaks, and the news has been all abuzz with it, and we can talk about the back and forth of how the data gets transmitted and aid transparency even for nations. But I also wanted to talk about the vigilantism that comes after the fact. There's been a lot of stuff going on with people either pushing for WikiLeaks, in which case they're mounting cyber attacks on, you know, places that criticize them. But one place in particular, EasyDNS, it was reported that they were hosting DNS for WikiLeaks and then dropped them. Hmm. Well, it turns out it was reported incorrectly. It was actually every DNS that was hosting them. But EasyDNS, the folks over there, ended up with a denial of service attack sent by the internet, taking them out. Unfortunately, it was the wrong person. It was totally mob mentality on the internet gone awry.
Okay,
well,
so WikiLeaks is
always awry.
WikiLeaks is publishing stuff, and it's definitely getting very concerned.
But
some people get really upset about it, and so they do what's called a denial of service attack, which means you basically flood a system with too many requests, and the system fails. And the one that they attacked was the domain name servers that provided the WikiLeaks link to IP address that we talked about.
The one that took it away specifically.
But they hit the wrong company.
Right, because one site reported it incorrectly. Then hit the wrong target. It's the part of the internet that we don't like to talk about as much, but it should be talked about.
It's
more.
Interesting, as I've actually heard several stories related to that.
And you know, we'll talk about it this week on GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer electronic parts as well as support services. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by home and small business, providing support to businesses, tech support for home computers. Business tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. Thank you for listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Marksell. The Geeks Today were Mini, and thank you all for doing this. And also to Rick and Jordan Hart, thank you for being here. And back to the station.
You've just experienced a very special holiday parade, GeekSpeak. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org.